Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the 7 a.m. Overeaters Anonymous, A Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Amy G., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Today's date is Thursday, May 16, 2024, and today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're in the chapter, There Is a Solution, and we are on page 20, the first paragraph. That starts with, you may have asked yourself, ending in, what do I have to do? Unpacking that one paragraph only. Today's readers are, and many thanks to Team Thursday, Katie G., Tamara C., Tricia D., Joni C., and the newcomer greeter, Chris W., and the host for the second awesome unrecorded hour, Nancy C. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, May 15th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 21,404. That's 21,404. And for the 10 a.m. meeting yesterday, 21,405. 21,405. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask for Tricia D. to read the 12 steps. Please go ahead, Tricia.
Thank you, Amy. Good morning. This is Tricia D. from Georgia, the 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food. Their lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Tricia D. Much appreciated you filling in.
Sure, glad to do it.
Thank you. I will now ask for Joni C. to read the 12 traditions. Please go ahead, Joni.
Good morning. This is Joni C., recovered compulsive overeater, very grateful but not cured. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much, Joni C. Okie dokie, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. If you go over, you'll hear me say time, or you'll hear the beeper in the background. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only, please. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Again, this meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speaker's, should be muted. Today, we resume our study in the Big Book. We're in the chapter, There is a Solution, on page 20, on the first paragraph. And I'm going to ask Katie G. to get us started. Go ahead, Katie. Can't wait.
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, my fellows. This is Katie G., recovered compulsive eater in Boston, Mass. Okay. You may already have asked yourself why it is that all of us became so very ill from drinking. Doubtless, you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless state of mind, hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? I find it really interesting that it says why twice, but then it's going to tell us, what do I have to do? And my experience with that is that why is a management question, and I'm not in management anymore. But I really wanted to talk about, I'll never forget, when I came into the rooms, I didn't understand that the Big Book was a textbook. I didn't understand that it was anything but a story about a white male that I had nothing to do with and about a bunch of drunks. And over the years, thanks be to God, I have been able to identify in. I remember the first time that I heard an alcoholic talk about how he had an allergy of the body, an abnormal reaction. So for example, my husband gets a craving for a hot fudge sundae, eats it, and it's done. For me, if I put a hot fudge sundae into my body, the craving begins. Or if I'm bulimic with exercise, the craving begins. And then an obsession of the mind, right? An obsession of the mind that all I can see is me all day. And why am I saying all this? Because there is a solution is the name of this chapter. In order for me to want to follow the solution, I got to know if I'm an alcoholic, if I'm an alcoholic. And if I am an alcoholic, so for me, my experience has been, I didn't know I was an alcoholic with food when I came in. In fact, I've been in the rooms for 20 years. I didn't know what it meant to be an alcoholic. And guess what? It doesn't have a lot to do with food, right? Like, yes, I have an abnormal adverse reaction to food, but the greater aspect of my disease and the allergy doesn't change. It's not like when I am done with the steps, I'm not all of a sudden be able to eat flour and sugar, but I have an obsession of the mind, and that obsession of the mind will kill me. I have a disease that wants me dead, will settle for me eating. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of my trouble. And the reason that's a problem is because all I'm doing is thinking about myself. Eating will be a step up. But what I really wanted to share today is that in agnostics, it says, when I became an alcoholic, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, I could not postpone or evade. I had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is everything or God is nothing. And I cannot not talk about God. If you're new and talking about God makes you uncomfortable, they are exactly where you're supposed to be. The main object of this book is to give you a relationship with God that will help you a day at a time to do what God has done for me, which is that I am a compulsive eater, but today I am recovered, which means for today, I do not suffer from compulsive eating. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, KG, for getting us started. Okay. Before I take names, although we value everyone's experience, strength, and hope, we ask that if you shared in the last couple of days, namely Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, that you step aside and allow others to share their experience, strength, and hope. So who would like to share on what was read?
Reva P.
Ava.
Lisa M.
Nick.
Lisa. Who F?
Nick F.
Monique?
Nick.
I'm not getting it.
Vasa O?
Vasa O.
Nick F in Tennessee.
Oh, Nick. Nick. All right, finally. Sorry about that. Okay. Gotcha. Anyone else?
Lisa C?
Lisa.
Chris M.
Ajua W.
Ajua W. Anyone else? Okay. All right. We've got a great lineup here. Reva P, Lisa N, Nick F, Vasa O, Lisa C, Chris M, and Ajua W. All right, Reva, take it away.
Good morning. This is Reva P, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. I love this paragraph because it reminds me that when I came into program, and I can still be like that today, I really thought that if I answered the why question, why am I doing this? Why am I binging on the same thing again that I did yesterday, that I did an hour ago, when I know it doesn't end well? Why? And I thought if I answered the why question, I would be fixed. And I now understand that when I ask why questions, it's basically a lack of acceptance. I'm sort of whining. Why? But it tells me, you know, the header is there is the solution. And it tells me that if I want to get well and I want to have what those who have recovered have received, the question I need to ask is what do I have to do? That's all that matters. And, you know, the same thing applies to why am I resentful? Why did she do that? Why did he say that? It doesn't matter. And yes, inventory helps me see some of the, you know, root causes of things, but the most important thing, if I'm a real compulsive overeater, if I want to get well, that's all I have to ask. What do I have to do? And it's the actions, acting my way into right thinking sometimes that make so much more of an impact than trying to figure things out and analyze that never really got me well. So I loved the reminder, the solution is doing what works and taking the action. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Reva P. from Toronto. Okay, we have Lisa N. followed by Mike F. or Nick F. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you, moderator, for your service this morning. Good morning, Lisa N. from Wisconsin. And I love reading this paragraph because it brings me right back to the day that I stepped into the rooms of OA for the first time. It was an in-person meeting. And I just wanted to know why I was fat. I wanted to know what the problem was, and I wanted to stop it. And I wanted you to tell me what I should eat, because I knew that's, you know, that food was the problem. So tell me what to eat. I'll do it, and I'll be on my merry way. But the trouble is, it was much more in depth. And as I sat and listened to that first meeting, it sounded like a bunch of gobbledygook to me. And they mentioned God, and I was like, yeah, I know God. Okay, let's get to the food part. And I was so impatient, so anxious, and so not wanting to be there. But when I finally said to somebody after 2 years, tell me what to do. What do I have to do to get over this problem? Because now what I really wanted was the peace of mind. Yes, I wanted to be thin, but I really couldn't stand the mind torture that I was having with the food. And so I was in a hopeless condition. My mind and body were in a hopeless condition, and I wanted to get over it. And I finally went to the right place. Readers Anonymous, and if you're new, hang in there, keep listening, and be willing. Just ask God for the willingness. So much for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Lisa N. from Wisconsin. Okay, Nick F. followed by Vasa O. Please go ahead, Nick. Nick, press star 1 to unmute, please.
Sorry about this. This is Nick Helfand. Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, please. Go ahead. You're all set.
Okay. I'm Nick Helfand, Tennessee. Good morning, family. I am a compulsive overeater. Thank you, moderator, for doing service. And to the young lady that got us started, I like to hear why is a management question. Like, I don't have to ask why anymore. I did that my entire life, and that got me to over 400 pounds. I also like that this is a textbook. I honestly, I'm sober in AA and Alcoholics Anonymous for 6 years, and it was really an awful experience going through the big book. Why? Because I wasn't just an alcoholic and a pill head. I was a compulsive overeater, and I was eating as I was working the steps. Yes, I haven't taken a drink or popped a pill in 6 years, but I was not abstinent. And that changes everything, my perception, my ideas about life. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be honest, I really had pause at the idea of going through the big book ever again. I was not going to do it. I no longer drank. I no longer took pills. So what I did, I knew that I would have to work the 12 steps some way, somehow, because I am sober. So I know that the steps work, but not, I didn't want to look at the big book again. And so I worked feverishly, like vigorously, out of the OA 12 and 12, and I will be quite honest, I do not say I was on a diet with group support, because God did do for me what I could not do for myself, and that is, he took away my desire to eat the way that I was eating, and I've had nothing with sugar in it all this time. I've been abstinent for 3 years, but there are times when I've had intense cravings. There are times when I've ate more than what my body required. And so what happened, I've given away over 220 pounds, but I did, as I've heard on this line, the weight was gone, but I had no peace at time. At the end of it, I really didn't have the peace that I felt or that I hear expressed on this line when I hear someone say that they are recovered, when I hear my sponsor share that she is recovered, and when I hear the kindness and gentleness and also the firmness in her voice telling me what I must do. I think one of my main issues when I was a religious leader, my upbringing, was that I wanted God to do for me what I could do for myself. And I always questioned, why would I need to believe in God again? Because the word God gave me great pause in my relapse. And so God will never do for me what I can do for myself, because God is powerful, God is mighty, God is full of strength. And my God has given me the ability to have strength, to fix my meals, to think and move my body, to act kindly, to be tolerant, to have patience. God has given me all of these things, and so he lets me know that he don't have to keep doing these things for me. I'm called that if I want this way of life, if I want this solution, I'll just say I am going through the big book with my new sponsor, and all that hesitation and pause has been taken away. And so I thank God for you all sharing the message, and with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Nick F. from Tennessee. I did get that right. It was Nick, N-I-C-K. Did I finally get that right? Sorry. Oh, thank you. All righty. We've got Vasa O. and Lisa C. Go ahead, Vasa.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Vasa, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thank you, Amy, for your service and everybody's service this morning. This paragraph reminds me when I came to my first meeting of Overeaters Anonymous in 1986. I read the questionnaire to see if I was compulsive overeater. I passed it with flying colors. I got 100 on it. And I didn't even know, I've shared this many times before, I didn't know that compulsive overeating was a disease. I didn't know anything about the allergy of the mind. I just did not know so much. I didn't know. I knew a little bit about alcohol and drugs, but I wasn't doing any of those things. But, you know, when it came to the food, that was my drug of choice, which I didn't even know. So I'm just so grateful that somebody gave me this book. It was my sponsor, the big book. And I remember saying at that time, well, don't give me this. I'm not an alcoholic, you know. She said, well, just scratch alcohol, put food on the top, and be open-minded. And that's what I needed to be, open-minded. There was just really nothing left for me to do. The food was getting so progressive. There was nothing more I could do than what I did in the past. And I was just so ready, and I was so willing. It says, what do I have to do? And that's where I was. What do you want me to do? I don't want to die. This disease is just going to kill me. I had the house. I had the husband. I had the house. I had the children. I had the dog. I had pretty much everything that I want, that I needed. But there was nothing more that I wanted than just to put the food down. It was just going to kill me. And this is what I did. Just show me what you want me to do to recover, like those 100 people that came, the beginners that came in the first edition. I will do whatever it takes. You know, to me, God is, am I in God? I'm not in God. Am I abstinent? I can't do that. I'm in it or I'm not in it. So I became in it with both of them. I needed to surrender to a power greater than myself, and I needed to take the action to do what these men did, or women that did what they did for their recovery. So I'm all in it, and I've been all in it. You know, I'm so grateful for the abstinence. I became abstinent from the first night I came to OA, and I've been working the steps to the best of my abilities in other areas, emotionally and spiritually. And I'm so grateful that God is doing for me that I couldn't do for myself in all those areas. Hi. God is the director. He's my... Thank you for letting me share my past.
Thank you, Vasa. And it's Toronto, right? Is that where you're from for the contact list? Let me make sure I had that.
Sorry, I'm calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Okay, well, I was off there.
Okay, no problem.
Vasa. Doesn't even sound like Toronto. Okay, got it. Vasa O from Massachusetts. Thanks, hon. Okay, Lisa C, followed up by Chris M. Go ahead, Lisa, grab the mic. Let's go.
Hi, good morning. This is Lisa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey. Thank you. Always want to say thank you. And thank you to God. And just loving the shares. In my professional work, there is, you know, the great debate of theory versus practice, right? And, you know, a lot of the people who make the decisions about what happens on the ground in my professional work are, you know, they're just mired in theory. They're answering the question why all the time, but they're not immersed in the actual work, you know, on the front lines, making real-time decisions and actually impacting change. So, you know, there's like a lot, there's a great divide. And in my life, there was this great divide. I also sometimes see the comparison, you know, theory versus practice, but also, you know, the difference between artistry, right, and getting stuff done, right? Like the artist in me wants perfection, wants precision, wants to do the same thing, you know, 50 times to get it perfect. But the practical part of me knows that sometimes things just need to get done. And they, in fact, are better off not done perfectly, actually, right? And so this has been really something that in recovery, I'm so grateful. And I'm so grateful for the other shares that touched on this so beautifully, the lead-off share and some of the other shares as well, that, like, you know, I have to abandon the desire to answer the question why. I can't really take a bite of that question. I have to abstain from it because it's a trap. What I always need to know now, and I love when I'm able to say to, you know, my boss, a colleague, my family members, what do you need me to do? And I love being in a position to do it, to do it right away, not procrastinate. Not think about why, not make excuses. I also love that I don't have to go to human beings for things that only God can provide, and that with God's help, I have the discernment to understand those things, right? Serenity prayer, right? The wisdom to know the difference. Because the truth is that for most of my life before coming into OA, I was constantly going to other people, oh, what do you think about this, and hemming and hawing and trying to uncover the why, because I really did think that's where the answer was. And gosh, I exhausted myself and everyone around me, and God was just there waiting with open arms, like, I'm right here, right? Because when I go to God with the things that only God can fix and that God loves to fix for me, He comes through every time. And I want to say that to the newcomer or to the skeptic, that just give it a try, right? If you have done everything else and there is nothing else to lose, there's nothing to stop you from just full surrender. I can't do it, but maybe God can. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa C. from New Jersey. All righty. Yes, and if you're new, welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome home. Okay. Excuse me. I don't know what's going on with my voice today. Chris M, followed by a Julia W. Sorry if I butchered that. Go ahead, Chris.
Good morning. This is Chris M from New York. Thank you, everyone, for your service and for your shares. I've been in the program since 1986, in and out, in and out. Had pink cloud abstinence the first 2 years and lost, I think I had like 24 pounds to lose. But from someone who is under 5 feet tall, that was a significant amount of weight. And also from a person who had starved myself and restricted from when I was 13 and maintained a thin body, that was an overwhelming amount of weight that I had to lose. But I did it. And my experience in OA has been, how do I, if I'm going to work the steps, all it has to do with it being thin. That's all it had to do with. How am I going to not be fat? And I missed the point. And I really, really missed that I was ill. You know, and it says here, have asked, why is it that we've all become so very ill from our addiction? I didn't recognize that I was ill. I mean, I kind of knew I was, but I couldn't really commit to that in my mind and my heart. I didn't want to be ill. I just wanted to have like an eating disorder, a problem with food. But now I'm 61 and I just can't hide from the facts anymore. It's glaring at me that I am ill. I think, and I look at how I have behaved all these years and how the self-seeking and the fear has really ruled my life. And the one thing that always amazed me with reading this book is seeing how, these people were so ill and behaved so badly. And then when they became sober and they worked the steps, they recovered, you know, and it says in the face of expert opinion, to the contrary, they recovered from this hopeless condition. That always amazed me. But, you know, I was never going to get that unless I understood, you know, steps 1, 2, and 3 and accepted all of it and understood that I had to work the steps in order to heal body, mind, and soul. And so it's funny. It says here, what do I have to do? I was just thinking the last few days, I got a new sponsor, and I was like, you know what, Chris, you know, you can't do things the way you did them before, where you just left out stuff, you know, take what you want and leave the rest. I can't do things the way I did them, where I kind of identified out in a lot of ways that I wasn't really as sick as, you know, a lot of you other people. Thank you. But I did say to myself this morning, Chris, you know what, why don't you just do what you're supposed to do and stop trying to make your own rules? And by the grace of God, I pray that I do that going forward. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you so much, Chris M. And before we move on, we just a friendly reminder to folks where we are. We are on page 20 in the chapter, There Is a Solution, and we are on the first paragraph, you may have asked yourself. Okay. Azua W., please go ahead, and then we'll take some more names.
Joanne B.,
Melissa S.
No, I'm not taking names yet. We have Azua yet to go, and then I'm going to take names.
Good morning. My name is Azua W. I'm calling from Vermont.
Azua. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, moderator, for your service, and thank you to our lead sharer. I was also really struck by the comment that why is a management question. And, you know, it makes me think about the fact that our lives have become unmanageable. So that's just not necessary. It's not really a good spot to be in. It also makes me think of a line that I love in a devotional song that says, why is a question that is never far away, but healing doesn't come from the explained. So I really appreciated hearing that this morning. I'm also aware that for me, the why question can be a way of doing the steps half-heartedly, and this is how that when I'm constantly in why, I might do the steps. So I've known seasons like this in my life. I might do the steps and people talk about the miracle that's happened for them. And I would think, well, I'll do it in order to see if that'll happen, you know, but not really with a full expectation that it will happen. which is something that I've been reflecting on more in the last few weeks. At the same time, I also want to say that a question that my sponsor has asked me in the past is, well, who is your God? And ask that of me in particular because of the kind of shame that I have sometimes with God. And I have to say I'm a curious person, but I'm also sometimes a really repressed person. And I sometimes really do need to ask why at this stage in my life, in part because I just never really have. I've never really let myself rage or grieve or anything like that. And I don't mean at other people. I mean with God, at God. And for me, the model of that is Job in Hebrew scripture, where this man gets to the point where he can actually say what is on his heart without holding anything back. And it's a lot of why. The thing is that God doesn't give him an answer, but God holds him. God is there in that process. So for me, there's this real tension of being able to be honest with my feelings and my whole self, especially before my higher power, while at the same time being my higher power servant and continuing to do the what steps as they are revealed to me directly from my higher power, but even more importantly at this stage, from those of you who have received miracles that I don't have at the moment or have lost, and to really care in terms of the choices that I make in my life, the actionable steps in my life about the what more than the why. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Ashra, can you get the spelling of your name so people can find you on the contact list? Is it AU? Maybe you muted yourself already. Okay, well, hopefully she'll come back on at some point. Okay, great. So now we are going to take more names.
So sorry. Wait, I'm so sorry. Yeah. This is Ajwa W. I'm back on.
Nancy J. from Geneva, Illinois.
Okay, can you all hold on 1 second, please? Ajwa, can I just get your spelling of your name?
Oh, thank you. A-D-W-O-A. But
okay.
It's pronounced Ajua.
Okay, got it. And you're from Vermont, is that right?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, now we're going to take names. Please go ahead.
Melissa M.
Ross M.
Rifkar.
Nancy J. from Geneva, Illinois.
Michelle M. from Oklahoma.
Michelle.
Tony B.
Lee H. Yes. Okay. I think I have Russ M, Nancy. I didn't get the last initial. Michelle, Tony B, and Lee H. Is there anyone else I missed? Okay. Wow. I actually got everybody. That's amazing. Okay. Russ M, you're up, followed by Nancy. Russ, please go ahead.
From Pennsylvania.
Oh, Joanne. Okay, I got you, Joanne. I think we should be able to fit you in. All right, Russ M, you're up.
Did you get Melissa S?
Oh, Melissa S? Yeah, Melissa, we may not have time, but we will see.
Okay.
We'll see how we go. Okay. Russ M, you're up. Please go ahead.
Good morning, AIM. Good morning, family. Russ M, recovered compulsive overeater from Norristown, PA. So when I read this paragraph, you know, we're banging home and hammering why. And I think of all the money, time, energy I put into trying to figure this thing out as I was destroying my body, not listening to people, not being open. I got wrapped up with an obsession of why I was a junkie, why I told myself. But then I look, if I didn't question that and didn't go through the trial and error and the big losses, and I would never be at that point where I said, what do you want me to do? I would have never been desperate. I don't know. I don't think I could have done it another way. So I'm just done figuring it out, and I know I'm different because of the steps and my trust in God through working this program. And, you know, the thing why cost me a lot, and I'm sure it cost others a lot too. But I would never be where I'm at now if I wasn't a little neurotic and OCD and obsessed over these things. So that's all I wanted to share. That, you know, that's it. Y'all have a good day. I pass.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you, thank you. All right, Nancy J, followed by Michelle. Go ahead, Nancy.
Thank you. This is Nancy J from Geneva, Illinois. Glad to be here. And what I wanted to say about this paragraph, what it makes me think of is that we are people in a crisis. We're really in a crisis with this, what they call here, the hopeless condition of mind and body. And when you're in a crisis, all you're thinking about is, save me, help me, how do I get out of this situation? And that's kind of what this paragraph is talking about, is it's kind of like you're lost in the woods and you're panicked. You're not focused on why am I lost in the woods. Your thought is, get me out of here, get me to safety. And the same thing, let's say you're overboard in the ocean. You're not saying, why am I here? You're saying, save me, get me out of the ocean. And we're in a crisis. We're in a horrible situation with this disease. And so what we want to know is, and it says here at the end of the paragraph, what do I have to do? We don't have time and we can't waste our energy on figuring out why we're in this crisis. It's how do I get out of this crisis? And this book, this wonderful book, tells us the action steps we need to take to do it. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nancy J. from Illinois. Michelle, followed by Tony B. Go ahead, Michelle.
Good morning, Michelle, recovering bulimic in Oklahoma. And I love this paragraph. It is so rich, and it really speaks to me of steps 1, 2, and 3. You know, why is for children? I see these ads on TV. Why? And it's for children who honestly don't know, who are curious. And as an adult woman, if I am asking myself why, and I think about this, figure it out is not one of our slogans. I hear that so often. And the way this is laid out, doubtless you are curious to discover how and why in the face of expert opinions, okay, in the face of doctors' opinions, doctors, medical community, in the face of expert opinions, to the contrary, there's that contrary word. And this part really speaks to me about taking contrary action, doing what I don't want to do to get the results that I want. Practicing the positive opposite. Contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. So contrary to what the medical community says, we have recovered. This is a spiritual disease, and it requires a spiritual solution. And, you know, I didn't leap out of bed, oh, I think I'm going to go to OA today because I am destroying my life by binging and purging. It's all circumstance. 100% is circumstance. And like the previous caller said, in crisis, am I willing to go to any length to get out of a tar pit, to get out of, you know, in the middle of the ocean? I absolutely am. And so if I want to get over it, you may already be asking, okay, now you've got my attention. I am desperate. I am dying. What do I have to do? Step 3. Turn my will and my life over the care of God as I understand Him. And so I am really looking at this, how they bring in contrary, they bring in a spiritual solution, and it's very subtle, but it's very, very effective. And I am so grateful that I got that message. And this is a tremendous group, and I'm very grateful to be here with you all. Thank you. And with that, I pass.
Thanks so much, Melissa from Oklahoma. Okay, Tony B, followed by Lee H. Go ahead, Tony.
Thank you, moderator. My name is Tony B, and I'm a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater living in Scotland. Thank you for all who've done service today. And great shares, and this is a wonderful paragraph. What did it make me think of? Well, expert opinion to the contrary. You know, the doctors saying that chronic alcoholics are doomed. And Young, though, being a bit different, Young giving a bit of hope there, saying that there are exceptions, that once in a while there's this profound alteration, you know, this complete shift in attitudes. And that's what this book is all about. That's what this is offering. But yes, most of the opinion is completely to the contrary. And then this question, what do I have to do? Well, the reader so far has been hearing about the disease. You know, they have also read Bill's story, which does describe what he had to do on page 13 in kind of summary form. But then they continue to lay it out in such beautiful detail, step by step. And here we have it. And as was said already, this is our textbook, absolutely. And when I think about, what I have to do, it's not natural somehow. This, you know, it really isn't. I have to mindfully choose to do this work and to take these actions, and also to take the not actions, like the pausing, the waiting, the sitting quietly. But there are a lot of do's as well: inventory, self-searching, reviews, prayers, working with others, outreach, steps. There are 12 of them, but I can so easily lose touch with them. Just, you know, it seems so simple, and then it can just be gone. I need others to remind me. This meeting and all of you remind me, you know, reading so thoroughly through and sharing. My sponsor reminds me, my sponsees, and those I make outreach to. So, yes, I just feel incredibly grateful for this meeting and all of you and for my recovery today. Thank you for letting me share my part.
Thank you so much, Tony B. from Scotland. Okay, Leah H. followed by Joanne P. Leah, go ahead.
Thanks so much, Amy G. This is Leah H. in Tennessee. So thankful to be here this morning. And when I first read this paragraph, I thought, what? This is not one of my most favorite paragraphs. But after I've read it and listened to some of the other shares, I see myself. I'm realizing that this book is so beautifully written, and just how Bill shares his story, and then he talks about in this chapter more and more, so that it's almost like my higher power is his higher power is speaking through him, so that we can identify in patiently, because my denial was so strong. I just did not want to identify in with this disease of mine, and so, you know, I had to be willing. And like somebody else has shared, I had to be desperate. I had to be at the end of myself. And, you know, we hear a lot about the hopeless condition of mind and body. And my disease definitely started in my mind. And I looked up condition, and it says it's the reckless, it's a skewed perspective. It is logic, but it's kind of an incorrect kind of a logic, and my reasoning was broken, and so, you know, it has taken me a long time, and probably for the rest of my life, to align myself with my higher power more and more, but it's just such a beautiful book about love, and it reminds me of the page 100 promises, where it just says that when we put ourselves in God's hands, it was better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And that is what I've experienced after having gone through these steps with this textbook. So I'm just glad to be here and glad to hear all the shares this morning, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Lee H. from Tennessee. All right, so we have Joanne P. and Melissa F. You guys can split it. We'll make it 2.5 minutes each. Okie doke. Go ahead, Joanne.
Thank you so much, Amy. This is Joanne P. from Pennsylvania, a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Just loving this paragraph because it reminds me of me when I came into the program, wondering what in the world was wrong with me and trying to get the answer to why I could not control my eating. And this program, reading the doctor's opinion, made me realize what was wrong with me. I have a hopeless condition of the mind and body. I have an abnormal reaction to food. I do have an obsession of the mind. And what do I have to do? I have to do the work, follow the 12 steps that all of you have followed to be recovered and that this book outlines for us. But yeah, I've just learned that this addiction settles in the mind, and we need constant spiritual conditioning. I need to connect with my higher power, abandon myself to my higher power, and realizing that I have no power, right? So it is only by the grace of God that I can be recovered, that I can do the work and follow these 12 steps that show me the way and teach me humility and teach me acceptance of my condition and teach me to surrender, because only God can do for me what I can't do for myself. And yeah, I spent most of my life in this hopeless condition, and I'm so grateful to be here today. I'm a changed person, and wow, what I learned about myself and my self-centeredness and who I really was. And yeah, I'm just thankful for all of you and your shares. I think my higher power speaks to me through all of you, and I'm so thankful for this program and for our fellowship, because we are in this together. And I don't know which is more important, our surrender to our higher power or our fellowship and just carrying the message. So practicing these principles in all our daily affairs keeps me grounded. So thank you so much for letting me share, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Joanne P. Melissa F., you're up. You got 2 minutes.
Hi, everyone. It's Melissa S. from Nashville, Tennessee. Eating is something that's always called to me, because when I was always on a new diet or doing something new, you can imagine me rubbing my hands together and saying, okay, what do I have to do? Getting excited about the plan. And of course, we know how that ends. It never works. And I'm reminded of page 44 in We Agnostics, if a mere code of morals or better philosophy were sufficient, we would have recovered. But we found these codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. So I wrote in my book, trying really hard doesn't even really work here. So what do I have to do? Actually, there's nothing at all I can do about this disease. And this reminds me of a speaker that I heard talk about how I can't change, but only God can change me, which is similar to how a farmer doesn't really grow food, but he does, fertilize the soil and he tills the land, but he actually doesn't grow the food, and I can't change. And a doctor, he doesn't actually heal people. Only God can heal people, but he can create an aseptic environment and he can give the right medicines, and then God can heal, just like I can't change. And I can't do anything actually about this disease because I am totally powerless. But what I can do is create an environment and take actions that would help me to completely actually change who I am altogether. And just only God can do it. And so what I need is God, and I need to actually stop doing things, stop putting my hands on things, stop trying to manage things. So like for me, what do I have to do? Actually, I need to become a totally different person who isn't even asking that question, who's just saying, God, protect me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Glad we were able to get you in there. Okay, I'd like to thank everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following. A share ID for today, Thursday, May 16th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,406. That's 21406. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Tamara C. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Please go ahead.
This is Tamara C., recovered compulsive overeater living in Missouri. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.